Hey guys, today's episode is hosted by my good friend Carrie Dills. Carrie Dills is a force within the WordPress community. She's also the host of the OfficeHours.fm podcast. And she is an incredibly stellar human being. Anyone who's in a room with Carrie is laughing, is feeling listened to, is feeling cared about. And she's way smart. She today is going to interview Dr. Jeffrey Clark. Jeff is a psychiatrist and an entrepreneur. He's also someone who is developing this deep expertise in sleep. And anyone that I've talked to in the entrepreneurial community is struggling with this. Often sleep is the first thing to go when we're busy and when our families and businesses have demands of us. So Jeff has some awesome wisdom to throw down and some great strategies. And I think this is going to be probably one of the most important episodes that we put out this year because of the importance of what Jeff has to share. Carrie is hosting today because Rob and I have just had some things happening in our family that have made us say, wow, we need to slow things down and we need some help. And so I asked Carrie to help and she did amazingly with 2 days notice, took over this interview for me, and she'll be hosting the podcast this week and then another one in the coming weeks. And I'm so grateful to her for stepping in and helping out. And Rob and I will be back on soon and explaining a little bit about some of the crazy and amazing things that are going on in our lives. And in the meantime, I give you Carrie and Jeff.
We plan to talk through the issues faced by startup founders and the people close to them.
That overused phrase, work-life balance.
It is an amazingly focusing time.
This is what we do, you know, aside from our families, this is our whole work life.
I am also known as Dr. Wine.
You know, this is a little bit non-traditional.
A little more zen in the startup life.
Zen founder. Those days were a mental struggle.
I have been stressed in the past, and I know that I will be in the future.
A founder and his or her significant other would both get value from the episode.
Jeff, it is really wonderful to have you on the show today. Thanks so much for agreeing to come on.
Oh, my pleasure. Glad to be here.
Yeah, so one of the things that particularly excited to talk about, and when Sherry asked if I would be willing to do this interview, I was like, heck yes, because this is a topic that is fascinating on multiple levels and applies to absolutely everyone, and that is sleep. So maybe just kind of briefly share, like, how did you, because you're a psychiatrist, like, how did the sleep component come to be something that you were particularly interested in?
Oh, absolutely. So I started learning about sleep all the way back in during my undergraduate degree. I was a neuroscience major, and so sleep is one of the most interesting physiological functions of the brain. And it turns out to be important for all sorts of diseases and illnesses. And in my role as a psychiatrist, I treat a lot of people who have sleep disorders on top of anxiety or depression or bipolar disorder. And also found that in a lot of my colleagues, sleep was a major challenge. And I just started to get more and more interested in it during my first year as a resident, where I was working 80 plus hour weeks most of the time. I realized I was just totally burnt out and tired and frustrated. And so sleep became a personal passion of mine. How to figure out, how do I get better sleep? How do I, even with limited time, I can find a way to hit the sack and fall asleep when my head hits the pillow.
Wow. Well, that's an enviable quality. I know specifically for entrepreneurs, like, it's not like you punch the clock and leave work and you go home and you think about anything but work. Work is with you wherever you go. So even when you lay down on the pillow, chances are high that you're still kind of mulling over a conversation from the day or thinking about maybe something that's going to take place tomorrow. How have you seen sort of the interaction specifically for entrepreneurs and sleep?
I think a lot of us wish that we could just turn off our minds and go to sleep. And the reality is that that's not going to happen for most people. And when you've got a project going that you're putting your heart and soul into, I'm not convinced that you can just turn it off and go to bed. But there's a lot of things you can do to try to make that happen.
Okay, well, let's talk about some of those. Give me your secrets.
So a lot of people will be familiar with the idea of sleep hygiene. And usually sleep hygiene is presented as a long list of ideas where you go down the list and you check them off, make sure you're going to sleep at about the same time every night, waking up at about the same time, making sure your room is comfortable. And these actually don't have a lot of evidence that they make a big difference to most people. They're good ideas. I don't think they'll hurt to try them, but oftentimes we find that people who really struggle with sleep will look at a list of sleep hygiene items and they'll go down the list, they'll start doing them, and they'll find that their sleep doesn't improve very much and they get pretty frustrated. And so I try to get away from the idea of sleep hygiene and focus on techniques that actually do work and help people a lot. So my orientation when it comes to sleep is using a treatment called cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia. This is something that works well for people who don't have insomnia also. But the general idea is if you have trouble sleeping more than 3 days a week, and that trouble sleeping also gives you trouble during your daily life, so you feel fatigued during the day, you don't have a lot of energy, you feel like you can't focus because you haven't slept enough, those are the kind of people that really benefit from these techniques. And they can be a little bit hard to learn. They're really intimidating for a lot of people, but they work really well.
So you said cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia.
Insomnia, yes. Yeah, and a lot of people think, well, I don't know that I have insomnia. And I wouldn't want to apply a blanket term to everyone who has trouble sleeping, because a lot of us have trouble sleeping, and maybe we have trouble sleeping one or two nights a week. And if that's the case, then it might be worth looking at a list of sleep hygiene recommendations and seeing if there's something on there you could change. But if it doesn't get better, or if it's more than a few nights a week, you really ought to think about trying out some of these CBTI techniques. So that's the shorthand for cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia, because it's just a mouthful to say.
All right. CBTI techniques. Is there one that stands out more than the others?
Absolutely. So there's two main techniques that really stand out. The first is that we think of sleep in terms of a Pavlovian response. So if you remember Pavlov's dogs, Pavlov was a famous neurophysiologist near the turn of the 20th century. And he had dogs that he would ring a bell for, and of course they wouldn't salivate. But when he gave them meat, their taste buds just went wild and they would produce saliva and spit. And he had this insight of what would happen if I started playing the bell and giving them meat at the same time. When he did that, they again salivated. So he decided to take away the meat. And he realized that playing the bell alone was enough to produce a salivary response afterwards. And this idea is called classical conditioning. And it turns out that a lot of us develop classical conditioning around our bed. So anytime you get into bed and you don't fall asleep, so let's say you get into bed and you're on your phone, you're answering a few emails for clients or communicating with your team, you're training your body that the bed is a place where it's okay to be awake. And your body will develop this Pavlovian response even when you put away your phone. So one of the techniques of CBTI is to train your body to only be asleep while you're in bed. So we use the principle, use your bed only for sleep and sex, as the big basic idea. And we take it to the extreme. So that means if you get into bed and it's been about 20 minutes and you're still not asleep, you got to get out of bed and go find something comfortable to do, something relaxing. And when you feel sleepy again, go back to bed. But if you stay in bed, lie awake, thinking about something you need to get done at work the next day, you're really going to have trouble falling asleep. And in the long run, it's really going to hurt you.
And it's frustrating, too, to lay there and know that you're not falling asleep, even though you want to be falling asleep.
Oh, yeah. It's totally miserable. I think all of us have experienced at least one night where we just lie in bed and we can't turn off our minds. And the thought itself of how do I turn down my mind is incredibly anxiety provoking. And it usually ramps me up. And there's actually a nice technique we use in CBTI to get around that also. And it's called paradoxical intention. So let's say you're getting in bed and you want to fall asleep and you can't stop thinking about work or falling asleep. What I typically recommend is focus instead on staying awake. So get into bed, make sure you're all comfortable, all ready to fall asleep, and just think about staying awake. Do your very best to stay awake for about 20 minutes If you're still awake by then, you can get out of bed, you can do something relaxing. But most of the time, people find that they just nod off while they're focused on being awake. And that's the paradoxical intention technique. It really helps with performance anxiety, which is what's happening when these thoughts keep us awake is, you know, I can't sleep, I need to sleep. And so if you just focus on staying awake, more often than not, you'll fall right asleep.
Okay, so it's like counting sheep a myth?
You know, there's not a lot of data on counting sheep. If it works for you, I think that's wonderful. But I haven't seen a scientific study saying, you know, if you count sheep, you're going to fall asleep. That would be wonderful.
Oh, well, okay. We'll put that on the back burner. So, you know, entrepreneurs typically working longer hours than usual, which means, I mean, those hours have to come from somewhere. And I know a lot of times those hours are borrowed from sleeping hours. Have you seen a correlation between, is there kind of a typical curve of how much sleep the average person gets based on how much time they're working every week?
There is. So the traditional recommendation is for an adult aged, say 18 to 65, you should be sleeping roughly 7 to 9 hours a week.
A week?
Oh.
<I'm> you so said sorry. 7 to 9 hours a week. I think you meant day.
I think I'm thinking of neurosurgeons here. But no, you should be sleeping 7 to 9 hours a night. And that number isn't magical. It's some people do require less sleep than that, 5 or 6 hours. Some people get along just fine. A lot more people think that they get along just fine on 5 or 6 hours. And for entrepreneurs, a lot of times it's their team that's cleaning up a lot of messes when they're going on 5 or 6 hours a night. So the best studies of sleep or total work hours and hours of sleep actually come from the medical literature. So we found that when you take medical residents who work really long hours and you change the number of hours of work they do, if they're working about 60 hours a week, on average, they'll get about 6.5 hours a night, which frankly isn't enough. And if you're working 80 hours a week, which a lot of entrepreneurs do, on average, we'd expect to see about 5.5 hours. Now, everybody's different. You might compensate in a different way, but the more hours you put in at work, it's got to come from somewhere. And a lot of times that comes from your social life. It might come from your time exercising, your time eating, but some of that's going to come from sleep too. And so you've got to be really careful to find a balance. Now, I'm not saying that you can just turn it down and go from 80 hours a week to 40. It doesn't work quite that way. There's always going to be more work to do, but the quality of your sleep and the amount of sleep you get can dramatically increase so many things in your life that it's worth thinking of ways to systematize your business or to outsource a few hours so that you can find a way to sleep a little bit more. Maybe we could spend a minute talking about some of the benefits of sleep and why it might matter so much for an entrepreneur.
Let's do that, because I think that it's sort of like one of those things that, you know, it's good to eat your veggies. You know, it's good to exercise. You know, it's good to get sleep. But the knowledge doesn't actually correlate to any particular benefit that I might see, say, tomorrow at work. So, yeah, I would love to talk about those.
Right. And I'm always cautious to say that something will make a big change tomorrow or the next day. These are long-term benefits that you're going to see as you persistently practice this. So if you're hoping for a magic bullet, I don't know that sleep's going to get you there, but the overall benefit is pretty huge. So the most important things about sleep is we know that people who have restricted sleep because of their jobs or otherwise have a reduction in executive function. So this is your traditional frontal lobe activity, your ability to make decisions, your ability to coordinate data, to work with people. This is a big deal. And to put it into entrepreneurial terms, I think of executive function as this is your ability to execute on your vision. And as the founder, it is your responsibility to have the vision, to be creative, and to make things work. And a lot of times it's easy for us to get caught up in the little details of our businesses, the things that maybe we only see because we're at the top. And those little details are good, but they take up a lot of time. And if we can find a way to have somebody else help with those so that we can stay focused on the big picture, we're going to get more sleep and we'll be able to do a better job at our role as in forming the vision, executing on that vision, and making things work. The other big things that we see with sleep is that impaired sleep really ruins communication. So if you're sleeping 5 hours a night, it's really hard to feel empathy towards your customers. And if you can't do that, it's hard to target them. It's hard to speak to them and make sure that your marketing efforts are on point. Because if you can't understand their perspective, it's really hard to know how to help them. The other thing that often happens when we have 5 hours of sleep a night is that we get more irritable. And sometimes having a little bit of edginess may be a benefit, but overall, it tends to cause problems. It can make your team communicate in a way that you don't want to have happen. And it can really ruin relationships and kind of put to bed a lot of the networking efforts that you make. So I think the benefit is really, really big in the short term.
Yeah, those are great points. And you said put to bed your marketing efforts, which that was punny. So let me ask you this, the idea of compounding sleep deprivation. So sleep deprivation, not just one night, but over a period of time, and the idea that you can make up for lost sleep, say by sleeping 12 hours on Saturday.
Yeah, that's a really common behavior that a lot of us get into. And it really is setting you up for problems. So some of the best studies we have on short-term impaired sleep show that if you go a full 24 hours, so you pull an all-nighter, the next morning, a lot of your motor functions and so your ability to coordinate movement, your ability to perform motion-related tasks, and your ability to process information. So those efforts will be about the same as if you had a blood alcohol level of 0.10, which is above the legal limit for driving in most states. So an all-nighter, while it may be good for a sprint, the next morning you really will be in trouble. The problem with this is that we don't adequately make it up when we sleep for 12 hours on the weekend. Throughout the week, you'll still have accumulated deficits of sleep, and you're going to have trouble executing in the way that you'd like to. And the long-term problem is that the more often you do that, the more likely you are to develop insomnia, burnout, depression, and anxiety with your business. I tend to think of these times when we sprint and go without sleep as something that may be okay in the short term, but that really cannot become a long-term pattern. There are a very small percentage of people that have the right combination of genetics and passion and ability to function at a high level on a small amount of sleep. And I think it's safe to assume, for the most part, that you aren't one of those people. That's what I assume about myself, because I've made the opposite assumption at times, and it's been a disaster. Being a founder is a marathon. It's not a sprint. And you really need to invest in doing things that are sustainable, so that when you do have a sprint, when you do have an emergency, when your server goes down in the middle of the night and you need to fix it, you can do that. But if you add that onto an already strung out position, you're really going to be in trouble.
Yeah, you know, I think that plays in just an overall health and the idea that if you're not in a healthy place yourself, you know, mentally, emotionally, from a holistic perspective, you're less effective and helpful to other people. And sleep certainly plays a role in that in my life. I'm one of those people that it's kind of embarrassing to say how much sleep I could sleep every day. But we're talking about that sleep deficit. And really, it seems like it turns into just a bad cycle. So for instance, somebody that lives in my house, it's not me, and I won't name names, but there's only two humans in my house. He has trouble sleeping, and we call it, at our house, we call it work brain. So you go to bed, work is on the brain, it's hard to fall asleep. You finally do get to sleep, and then, you know, as we get older, we may be up during the middle of the night to go to the bathroom or something. You come back to bed and try to fall back asleep, and then all of a sudden, you're wide awake, you're thinking about work again. You can't sleep, so you get out of bed, and you know it's 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. And then by the time you feel sleepy again, you're only 45 minutes away from your alarm clock going off. So there's no point going back to sleep. So you start your day at a deficit, and it's just, I see the cycle repeating itself. Like you just sort of keep falling back into that. And I know we've talked about some specific techniques, but What would be your best piece of advice to someone who just was trying to break that cycle of sleep deprivation and just turn the brain off?
So this is a complicated problem, and there's a few different approaches that may really help. So in my line of work, we call this sleep maintenance insomnia, the inability to maintain sleep despite falling asleep okay. And there's a few things that I think really work with this. I think the first part is finding adaptations to reduce stress and deal with stress in your life. So I tend to think that the hour before you go to bed is a great time to disconnect from your business and try to find a moment of peace. There's some reasonable data that shows that if you can turn off screens during this period of time, that'll make a big difference too. And I think for entrepreneurs, it's twofold there. You get rid of the light, which produces wakefulness in your brain, and you also get rid of some of the anxious thoughts about dealing with problems that maybe aren't solved very well at 11 p.m. at night or at 3 in the morning. So being able to sit with the discomfort of knowing that you can't fix your business at that moment is an important skill to learn. Some people use mindfulness meditation as a way to try to reduce stress there also, where they'll take a few moments to meditate and allow themselves to experience what they're experiencing in a non-judgmental way and to focus on their breath or to focus on their body in a guided way. There's a lot of good evidence that that in itself can reduce the overall tone in your body that produces wakefulness. And there's good evidence that will help you fall asleep and stay asleep a little bit better. The other thing that can be done is a technique we call sleep restriction. And this sounds terrifying to anyone who has had trouble sleeping, but it's the single most effective technique for sleep maintenance insomnia. It works for all insomnia, but especially the type where you wake up during the night and can't fall back asleep. And how this works is you take a sheet of paper and every night you write down exactly how many hours you sleep and exactly how many hours you're in bed. And over the course of a week, you take this information and you tally it up, you decide how much you're sleeping on average, how much time you're spending in bed. And then there's a standardized protocol you can use to adjust it over the week so that it averages out and you get the same amount of sleep each night so that you don't have these ups and downs. And this is a big part of why I've created my current product, Slumber Camp, which is a way to systematize sleep restriction and make it available to everyone. The other part that I think is important is recognizing that some sleep disturbance is normal and healthy, that we will have nights that are bad. And when that happens, it's okay to reflect on it and realize that tomorrow night will probably be better because you're a little more tired. You will sleep more soundly. And to let yourself be a little more comfortable with a bad night of sleep. Because when you can do that, you suddenly break the cycle and realize, hey, this was just one night. Tomorrow will probably be better. But when you get anxious about it and think, oh no, I didn't sleep well, I'm not going to sleep well tomorrow night, it can really cause a lot of problems.
Yeah, a lot of anxiety. So you mentioned keeping the log. What are your thoughts on, you know, like a Fitbit or Apple Watch or things like that that kind of monitor sleep? Do you find those to be, I don't know, very helpful in terms of the data they produce?
So I would say the jury is still out on whether those are helpful. Most of the evidence we have on sleep comes from self-reported diaries. Fitbits and Apple Watches, they can produce some good data, but it's not as well validated whether it correlates with how much you're actually sleeping or if it's just a good ballpark figure. And to be fair, keeping a sleep log is also a good ballpark figure. I think the danger that you can often get into is if you focus so much on sleep and measuring every little detail of it, it can make you more anxious about it. And so it's really a balance of choosing, do I ignore this part and focus on this part? And for any individual, I can't say, but I don't know that measuring every little thing about your sleep is going to make it better.
Gotcha. So awareness, not obsession. It's kind of like Google Analytics.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's good to have the data, but not all data should be actionable.
Right.
So one thing, there's a couple things I'd like to keep chatting with you about. One that's probably very specific to entrepreneurs is travel. So you know, you mentioned earlier the sleep hygiene. One of those recommendations that's, you know, the jury's out is creating a comfortable, same sleep routine or whatnot. Well, when you travel, that's pretty much out the window. I mean, you're going out late, you know, on client dinners, or you're, even if you get to bed at a reasonable time, the bed is, you know, feels like you're sleeping on a piece of plywood. Any tips for traveling and getting better rest when you're on the road?
So there's a few things you can do. I think it's always going to be a struggle to sleep in a bed that's not yours. I wish I had a way around that. Some people find a certain hotel chain that has beds they like, but if you're crashing on someone's couch, you may not have that luxury. So yeah, do spend a few minutes trying to make the room as comfortable as you can. A couple other travel tips are that when you're traveling, expect to sleep a few hours less a night when you get there, and expect your body to catch up as you go along. It may be uncomfortable for a few days, but it will get better. The other tendency that we often fall into when we travel is we may be more tempted to use sleeping pills or alcohol to help us fall asleep, or marijuana. And I would caution against that. A sleeping pill occasionally is probably all right. I mean, talk with your doctor, make sure that it works for you. But getting into the habit is always going to be a problem. And although alcohol is the most commonly used sleep aid in the world, it tends not to be very good. It usually helps us fall asleep. And then as it metabolizes from our bodies, it increases wakefulness and often causes early morning awakenings, less restful sleep. And just be careful when you're traveling that you're not drinking more to try to compensate for time zone or having an uncomfortable bed. At the same time, though, I also think that caffeine can be a great tool in the mornings. So if you're having trouble getting up, using a moderate amount of caffeine can be a reasonable thing. If it's getting late in the evening, you know, you should be careful. Try to avoid increasing that when you're traveling. But a little bit extra in the morning, yeah, it might not be a problem. It might be a really helpful thing to keep you going.
Okay, so don't pound the Red Bulls after, and especially the Red Bulls and vodka, like in the late in the evening. Bad for sleep.
Yeah, that's a good rule of thumb.
Bad for sleep. Okay, well, the alcohol was and pills were one I specifically wanted to address, because those are like, okay, this helps me fall asleep faster. But you're saying that science shows that that can actually decrease the quality of sleep over the course of the night?
Yes, certainly with alcohol, we know that for sure. Sleeping pills are a bit of a different story, because in some people, they really do improve quality of sleep. There's nothing that comes free. You're usually trading one phase of sleep for another when you take a sleeping pill. And there's really no data that long-term use of sleeping pills is good for you. And in terms of overall medications that cause problems, sleeping pills can be some of the most harmful and addictive medications, especially in people who are prone to addiction, people who are prone to falls or dizziness, and all older adults especially. So if you're getting past 60, I'd really be cautious about using a sleeping medication. And again, it's something that should only be used as needed. I think the ideal for my patients is the people who feel, if I just have a sleeping pill in my bag, I know I'll be okay, and then I can fall asleep because I've got a backup plan. That's perfect. That's what I want to work with, because in reality, the best treatment for trouble sleeping is with cognitive behavioral therapy. It works just as well as sleeping pills. It works for a lot longer, and the side effects are a lot safer and a lot better, which is why we try to focus on therapy when we can. Changing behavior is the most important thing for sleep, and it really works.
Well, that sounds like a good note to end on. I still have more questions to ask, but we are actually coming up on probably the closeout point here. I don't want to hijack Dr. Walling's podcast, and then she'll never invite me back. Thank you so much, Jeff, for sharing your insights on sleep. And I'm sold. I was already sold, but I think I want to sell some other people in my life of the benefits of sleep. And, you know, I think what you mentioned, the word discomfort a couple of times, and that's okay to experience a little bit of that discomfort while you're changing a habit, knowing that in the long term, you're going to sleep better, you're going to rest better, which translates to working better, more effectively. That's all related. So great stuff. Jeff, where can people find you online to either say hello or learn more about Slumber Camp?
Yeah, I'd love to have you come and check out slumbercamp.co. It's a fully featured cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia course. And my goal is to get as many people as possible using these techniques. And so even if you can't afford it, I've got scholarships to make it free. So please come make your sleep better. Your life will be better for it. Your business will be better for it. Your customers will be better for it. This is an important thing to invest in.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Jeff. And for all you folks tuning in, appreciate your time today. If you head over to zenfounder.com, you can find the notes for this episode along with other episodes of the show. And until next week, we'll see you then. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Zen Founder. Our theme song is A New Beginning by bensound.com, used under Creative Commons.